Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 3, Episode 3 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2021. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest, and that is Potluck. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No worries, man. I guess what we'll do is kick it off with a little bit of background about yourself. How you got into gaming, when you made that switch from casual to competitive, and why League?
So I guess I started playing video games when I was like a very young kid. My parents weren't like super supportive of it, but my friends always had like game consoles, stuff like that, and I always kind of got brought in that way. Mm-hmm. I was raised playing a lot of like traditional sports, playing a lot of hockey, playing a lot of soccer, stuff like this. And then eventually I just kind of fell in love with gaming once I got my own computer and these different things. And it was mainly because some of my friends that I played hockey with played League, and they introduced me to the game. And then actually I ended up stopping playing hockey the next year and just playing League all day like a degenerate. So that was kind of the introduction into League. Where it went from casual to competitive, I was just in university. I didn't really like what I was doing. I felt like I was kind of forced to go into it. And I guess as an escape, because I didn't really like what was going on with my life, I just played a lot of video games. And I've always been kind of like competitively driven. I've always had that nature behind me. So a game like League was much more interesting to me than like some sort of like story game or anything like this. So I always found like a lot of passion in the competitiveness behind the game. So I think that's where I really like got into that. I played on a few amateur teams because at the time I just thought it was fun. I was kind of like Diamond 2, Diamond 1. I wasn't really all that great at the game, but I enjoyed the aspect of being on a team and kind of like cumulatively working for something. And then there was one team that I joined where I was like a Diamond 1 player playing with a bunch of challengers just because they were my friends. And they helped me get a lot better. And at one point I ended up getting into Challenger and kind of getting recognized by I don't know the full story, but I know bits and pieces. So at the time, there was a Challenger Series team called United. And at the time, their jungler was Gilius from, people would probably know him from LEC. And apparently, there was one day where I was just going to town on him a few games in a row. And he was pretty upset, apparently. And I guess Licorice at the time, who was their top laner, heard my name in the mix. And when the offseason came and Gilius and Fox at the time was their mid laner, went back to Europe, they wanted to keep scrimming during the offseason. And I don't know for what reason other than this is what I was given. I don't know if this was it for why I got reached out to, but Licorice ended up reaching out to me and asking me to sub for some scrims for them. Mm. And I played probably a few weeks of scrims with them and then ended up getting signed as a sub to United. And that's where I kind of transitioned into esports.
Yeah, hell yeah. And how is that feeling from going from, I guess, just playing ranked and just like grinding away to then all of a sudden being signed?
It felt really surreal. I guess it was like the first time where I don't think I knew how to grasp it because I was such a fan of League for so long and I'd been playing the game for so long. Like I loved watching LCS. I loved doing all these things. And it never, even when I was Challenger and all these things, nothing ever felt attainable. Like it didn't really feel like that would ever be me playing in those games. And when I was there, even just like seeing the people that I would see on screen felt very, very surreal. Like I was just a huge fanboy. And I can't explain how it felt. Eventually it kind of faded and it became something where it was more like, okay, like these are just people too. But initially it was like, wow, this makes absolutely no sense why I'm here.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point you bring up as well, because I think that when a lot of people go from that casual to competitive step, everyone just seems on such a high level. And it's really nice to hear you say that, you know, they're people as well. Because I think once you shape your mindset around that, you know, they're just like everyday people as well, I think the stress comes off a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I found it really hard to approach people at the start because, like, I guess I don't know why the mindset was developed, but just anyone that was famous, it was like, well, I'm not very great or I'm not doing anything spectacular. So why the hell would they want to interact with me? So whenever I'd interact with these players that I felt were so much better than me, it's like, well, why would they want to be my friend or why would they want to interact with me? I'm just some piss random. Yeah. But then eventually I kind of realized that it's like, oh, like, I mean, they like going to the gym. They like playing soccer. They like doing these different things or football, however you want to say it. And like, I was able to bond or connect with these people at the time and kind of make some friends.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome, man. And, you know, briefly earlier, you mentioned a little bit about hockey. So how much of an importance did hockey play into your, I guess, you know, sporting? And did that have a lot of implications towards, you know, playing esports professionally?
In a way, I would say so, yeah. I was introduced to hockey by my father at, like, a very young age. Mm. I think the first time that I was out, I can't say for sure, but I think what I was told was I first started skating when I was 3 or 4, so when I was quite young. And ever since I can remember, I was playing in hockey leagues from the time that I was, like, just starting school to the time that I was graduating high school. Mm. Like, hockey was something that was always there for me. It was kind of like a way of living at the time.
Yeah.
And I was playing at a high level, and I was playing with good players and against good players. And I was just such a sore loser. Like, I couldn't handle someone being better than me. I wanted to win. Like, I hated losing so much, and it developed this nature where it wasn't, like, super healthy for me. And it's still something that I'm working on to try to kind of, like, conquer what's developed me from when I was a kid of this, like, constantly comparing, constantly doing these things. But I also think that that's really what pushed me to be such a competitive person, where I find something that I really want to be good at, and I latch on to the idea that, like, I want to be better than everyone else, and I want to play well. And it has, like, pros and cons, because it's the reason that I became a pro player, and it's the reason that I'm probably also not currently a pro player. It kind of, it's like a double-edged sword.
Yeah, for sure. Really just trying to understand where you want to work yourself on and you know, the story that takes, because often, you know, with a lot of players I coach, they have a goal that's, you know, sometimes unobtainable. And it's, I guess, it's that goal it's always going to be there. It's inevitable, right? But then it's also about, you know, being real and thinking, okay, so, you know, in reality, what's the most realistic expectation that I can have myself, that I can improve my performance in the short term? So it's always about having those kind of different mindsets, but also, you know, always keeping the long-term one always there in some sort of way.
Yeah, I would agree with you there for sure. It's hard to set something attainable, especially when you don't really, like, league is, it's hard to understand your bounds, and it's also not something that you can be fully in control of. Like, there can be really great players on really bad teams that, like, aren't going to go anywhere, or you can have a team of very talented players on paper and the roster might not go anywhere. Like, there's only so much that you can control, and it's hard to set, like, individual goals when it's such a team focused game sometimes.
Mm, that's perfect. Yeah. And I think that kind of, you know, leads into what I wanted to have a chat about in regards to this whole idea of building team synergy. So in your eyes, how important is it to have a team that is really well synergized with each other, their comms are on par, and they've kind of developed their own kind of personality?
I would say that's, at least from my perspective, I think it's a lot. It's a lot for sure. You have to have talented players, of course, that are good at the game and that understand the game. But at the same time, when I've played on teams where I felt like we were really good or where we were really bad, usually what was lacking or what was there was the trust between players. And that bond, I remember there was a roster that I played on. It was myself, Alarim, Insanity, Apollo, and Gate. Mm-hmm. And these people collectively as a group, we all had, like, very similar personalities, very similar senses of humor. We all got along very well. Yep. Like, everything meshed from the beginning. Nothing was forced where, like, we wanted to go out and do things. Like, I remember we all went out to an arcade together and we had, like, a really good night, and we, like, some of us, like, going out and working out together, or we like to go and get, like, sushi together, these different things. And it was a team where everyone genuinely connected and genuinely enjoyed doing things together. And even though we weren't necessarily, like, the best players in our role at the time or these different things, I think we started off our season 6-1 or 7-1. And I think I attributed a lot of that to the fact that, like, everyone really, like, that was a team where everyone picked each other up when we were having a bad day. Everyone cared a lot about each other. And we really kind of had, like, a team spirit in a way, or a team culture that was developed to help support each other and kind of, like, put faith in each other. And I've also played on the opposite end of the spectrum where, there's, like, internal team politics. People are, like, kind of, like, creating cliques. Like, people feel excluded, these different things. And it's hard because inherently, like, if you don't like someone and you wouldn't be friends with them and you're on a team with them, it's a challenging thing to handle, because, like, it's going to be very unnatural if you want to spend time with that person or you want to do these things with the person that you dislike or don't, like, see eye to eye with, in a way. So it's kind of hard to to find a group of players that like everyone really meshes. But I feel when you find that, it's really impeccable what that team can do.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree. And I think that, you know, I've seen it in my personality as well with a lot of players that I've coached who, yeah, as you said, they have that team where they bond together, they really mesh together, and everything just flows really nicely, right? But then you have teams where they come together and it's more so just like it's business. It's like 9 to 5, this is what we're doing. Outside of this, we don't really talk to each other. And that's kind of like a bit of a disjointed team situation, maybe.
Yeah, I would agree with you for sure. I think it's hard to put into words. It just feels like there's something missing or there's something lacking when it's in the moment.
For sure. And I think that, you know, building a trust within your team is one of the crucial things, because, you know, when it comes down to the point where it be, you know, a best of five and it's the last game or, you know, whatever it is, and you're coming down to the moment and you've got to really put your trust in someone else and really just fully commit, you know, that could be the biggest or the best moments.
Yeah, no, for sure. There's been players that I've played with where when I see them on a certain champion or when I see them playing a certain way, like I just have like full faith that they're going to carry the game. I think that usually that the only time that I've really felt that is when I've played with players that are either just incredibly, incredibly talented or been on like teams where our team environment has been so good, where when someone says like, okay, like I'll carry this game or something, like I really believe them. And it kind of gives you that, that feeling of like, okay, like we can win. I just need to lose gracefully for the time being or these different things, and makes you feel okay about it.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Definitely. Now, I guess before we go into more of the in-depth, you know, your perspective on stuff, I just wanted to get a general gist of how you feel in regards to the widespread NA situation within esports. Now, obviously, League has grown exponentially since it originally started. Do you think that League's going to be continuing to grow or something else is going to take reign of it?
Well, we just saw the Pokemon MOBA come out.
True.
That could be the takeover, but I doubt it. I think 4 years ago when I first started playing League competitively, so many people at the time were talking about like, oh, we probably only got like a couple good years left in us. Like League's going to die. Like something else is going to come along. I feel like it's like repeating itself. I keep hearing this. And then like League is never dying. It's not like some years it might stagnate, some years it might grow, whatever it might be. But I really feel like League's not going anywhere. I think our viewership is like pretty far down at this point from what it used to be. Right. But at the same time, it doesn't really feel like there's anything replacing it. So I don't know. I don't think it'll go anywhere for at least another few years. And then in a few years, I'm going to say that again.
For sure. And yeah, I guess that kind of constant growth is, you know, sometimes inevitable, especially with a game that really does reign supreme within its category. I mean, you know, you think about contenders and you've got what, like Dota, Smite, which is a dead game. And it's kind of just, yeah, League pretty much is the one within its own category.
Yeah, for sure. I liked watching Dota and like TI and stuff like that, but
yeah,
I don't know. I think it's a hard to understand game. I think League's a little bit easier.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess, you know, when we look at economic, I guess when we look at regional models, for example, you know, OCE, we're definitely probably not as well competitive in compared to like EU or NA, that kind of region. So I guess where would you put NA at the current state in regards to, in comparison to Europe and then Asia as well?
In terms of competitiveness?
Yeah, in terms of competitiveness and just overall, yeah.
Well, I think we're pretty far behind. I don't really know how to... I mean, it's a large-scale problem. There's a lot of people that are constantly talking about how, like, high elo is just infested with win traders, boosters, like, streamers that are just trolling for fun. Like, I don't know. I think NA's... Just the culture, I guess, is really far behind the other regions. Like, I think a lot of people will say it. Like, I can't think of a time where I've heard a player, like, come boot camp in NA. Like, everyone is very quick to, like, go to Europe, go to Korea, these different places. Like,
yeah.
I just think that I don't know how to fix the issue. I think it's a really challenging thing to tackle, but I definitely think that we're pretty far behind the other regions.
Yeah, for sure. And it's really interesting to compare, I guess, you know, League of Legends, you know, Rainbow Six, Rocket League, all these different games, and to see which kind of region reigns supreme in different ones for different reasons. And I really like that kind of different mix because I guess it encapsulates a different mindset within players itself, and that can really reign supreme regardless of what game.
Yeah, I guess like Valorant would be a good example where, yeah. I mean, NA won the big tournament. Seems like in FPSs, North America can do pretty well sometimes, whether it be like there was times where they're, well, not the majority of time, but there were times where they're good at CSGO in games like this. So it seems like our FPS community is pretty good, but our MOBA community is not so good.
Yeah, because I helped coach the Renegades Vel team as well, do one-on-ones with those guys, and those guys are all really motivated, so they've all got real good mindsets, but you know, there's some teams that just don't have that kind of connection, like as we chatted before.
Yeah, for sure.
Now I guess one last thing I just wanted to quickly touch on is this whole idea of external allied health professionals. So I guess there's been a couple of little like questions within this industry quite recently, and it's a really interesting one. So I'd love to hear your mindset on it. And I guess that is, you know, we have some organizations who have dietitians, nutritionists, physiotherapists, exercise psychologists, sports psychologists, the whole shebang, you know, chefs, everything for them. Yeah. But then you have other organizations who have none of that. And I guess the question is having everything, is that fair?
Is it fair? Well, I would say yeah.
Mm.
When you look, I think that more teams should be doing it because, like, I don't know how you would classify that as unfair, I guess, in a way, where you look at, like, most major sports, actually, not even most, just every sport, like, they're going to have the laundry list of all of these things. The thing that can be kind of challenging, I guess, is if the teams have the funding for these different things. Mm-hmm. But if they do, I definitely see it as, like, a valuable investment. I mean, from my perspective, when I'm taking care of my physical mental health, I always play League of Legends so much better, whether it be in a team environment, whether it be in solo queue. And when you have even just people like a therapist to vent to or a sports psych to talk about like mindset or attitude or these different things, I've always found it like incredibly helpful to my success and my personal growth. So I would say it's kind of OP, so maybe it's unfair, but I think every team should be doing it.
Yeah. It's definitely like in regards to resources, I agree. I think resources is the biggest one. There are a lot of orgs that would probably love to do it, but just can't. Like I definitely resonate with the OCE scene. We really can't seem to get too many investments into that kind of scene, but I guess that's what I'm trying to help, you know, do with MindClick as well, is to help push the forefront for the OCE esports performance scene as a whole.
Yeah.
Awesome. Now, you mentioned solo queue there. Now, this is something I'd love to dig into. Now, I have had a lot of viewers that, you know, reached out with a different couple of questions who are league players, and, you know, they'd love to just really understand your mindset towards solo queue. And I guess the biggest thing is just trying not to get tilted. So what is your best kind of approach in not getting tilted, not getting thrown off your game, and really solidifying your mindset that, you know, I want to sit down now, I want to play like for X amount of hours. You know, this might happen, that might happen, but it doesn't matter. I'm just going to keep on going.
Well, up until recently, I would say I wasn't fit to answer this question because for the entire time that I was a pro player, I was a huge rager. I hated solo queue. All I would do is type to people. I would never say anything like overly bad. Obviously, I didn't want to get banned. I valued like the competitive things, but like, man, I would get so upset. So
reformed.
Yeah. So as of recently, I kind of like I've been forcing myself to do things that in my head, I was always able to tell myself like, oh, taking like a 10-minute break after a tilting game would always be helpful. But then like when you're sat there in that moment, like it's so much easier just to queue up and run it down the next game and not take that break. But if you get up, it always feels so much better, these different things.
Yeah,
I think it's about preparation. It's about mindset. For me, like when I was a pro player, I always felt like I had to like get up early, play games before scrims so that I was prepared and I was warmed up for scrims. But then once I wasn't having to constantly wake up early and play scrims and like play solo queue in the morning and all these things, I kind of realized that if I wake up and I go for a walk or I make sure like I'm hydrated, I make sure I eat well, all of these things, and I don't actually just like wake up and jump straight onto the computer into playing solo queue and I take care of myself first, I'm always in such a better mindset. So I think it really just depends on how you prepare for the day. Like there can be really awful things that happen in the games, but like you can really at the end of the day only control what you're doing, and kind of like really fixating on that mindset can be quite a challenge. But once you figure out how to do it for yourself, because it's going to be different for everyone, I think that that's when you can kind of like start improving and start taking solo queue like more seriously, I guess, without getting so upset.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think it's a very individualized thing, and how we approach it can always have a different kind of situation and outlet. You know, for example, I wrote a blog a little while ago and it was dealing with salt and toxicity. And I actually had a chat with a Grandmaster League player. And the technique he used was a very interesting one. And what he said was that regardless of if someone was toxic or whatever happened, he would imagine them having the worst possible life. So outside of their PC, their room would be in shatters, everything would be in tangles, and it would just be the worst. And that kind of helped him to bridge that kind of gap and then just be able to just accept what happened and then just kind of go into the next one. So I definitely think it's initially understanding it is probably the most important thing. And then you can kind of understand what can happen and how you can change it.
Yeah, I really agree with that philosophy, because specifically when I think back to when I was the most toxic or when I would spam and soul cure or do these things, it was always because something was going on in my life, whether it be like we just went 0-5 in scrims or like I just like I had a bad day for my mental health or these different things. Like it's almost always a projection. Like people aren't just typing for no reason. Like they're not angry for no reason. So I've been trying more recently. I'm not like super great at it, but I think I've been getting better slowly at understanding that like these people could just be having like a bad day. Like you just don't know what's happening with a person. I think like as of now, most games I play with chat completely disabled because I think it's just easier to do it that way. Yeah. But if I feel like typing to my teammates can be helpful where like I want to tell them like where to ward or where to do things, then if like people get toxic, just muting them, because like there's no point arguing. There's no point like saying anything back. You're just going to make them more mad. Like sometimes I fuel the fire and every time it's not a good thing. Like I'm not perfect, right? If I was, I would just always mute them. But I think that that's the best thing that you can do is just try to ignore it and try and play your own game.
For sure. And I guess that kind of advice really really follows suit throughout all ranks, do you think? As in, you know, if someone's in gold and looking to push into the next level, you know, looking to even be in, you know, bronze or silver, does that really help to really change that mindset depending on what rank you're in?
Absolutely. I think that this mindset is enforced more at lower elos than at higher elos, to be honest, because in lower elos, it's as a challenger player, not everyone's a challenger player, obviously, but like let's say they even knock themselves down a couple of ranks. Like let's say they're gold one and they go and play in like bronze one or something. Like they can probably pretty easily carry this game because they're just better than the other players that are playing. And when you're at a lower elo, if you really focus on self improvement in these things, it's very easy to 1v9 games as you get better. So I think for lower elo players, it only gets more important to focus on yourself.
For sure. And I guess that really follows a nice suit of how important is it to understand that, I guess, you know, we've got this goal of getting to Challenger, for example, but, you know, we might go up, we might go down. Sometimes we go down for a long streak, but it's okay with that because as long as we're kind of developing, we're working on bits and bobs, inevitably we're going to go up.
So something that my mid laner told me, it was one of those things where I think I had thought of it before, but when I heard someone else say it, it clicked so much better in my head. Right. Where he pretty much just told me, like, I was pretty tilted after a game where we were doing, and he was just like, just go rewatch the VOD, and, like, if it was him that fucked up, then, like, you know that you can't do anything about it. Like, there's no point to be mad about it, and if you're the one that made the mistake and it was your fault, then, like, okay, you can learn from it. Mm. And then, like, now that I go back and when I'm, like, very upset about a game or something that happens, like, let's say we're playing like a really strong early game comp and we lose a fight on crab somehow and we like all die like 0-4, like the game is pretty much over at that point in a high low game. Like there's no real winning. Like a lot of the times, like the initial reaction is like to type or to say something or to do something, but now whenever I go back and the game ends, we lose, or like somehow we come back and win, I like to, like, I'll go and look at the VOD and then I'll figure out, like, okay, was this my fault, was this not my fault? And with either outcome, I always feel so much better about it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that really persists into the same importance of how important is void of your own, because I know that a lot of people don't like to do it. Like a lot of people just don't want to go back and look at their own mistakes and kind of acknowledge where they've gone wrong.
It's really hard to say, because I've played with players that, like, they can't explain a thing, where they just play off feel, but they're really good at playing off feel. And then I've played with players where, like, they know every intricacy to a matchup. Like, all that they want to talk about is, like, the numbers of different items, like, why things are good, why things are bad. It's really hard to say, like, what's better. For me, I think up until the last team that I played for, I was more of, like, this just feels good, so I want to play it. but I was playing with a lot of players who were very, very smart, and they kind of like helped me see the benefit to all the smaller things as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that VOD reviewing, now that I understand like what I'm meant to be looking for and what I should be trying to get out of it, I feel like it's very productive. But when I was just mindlessly looking at VODs, and I don't think I was gaining anything from it, like there has to be a purpose behind it.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. And when you were at the Immortals, did you go through like VOD reviews as a team? Was that a collective thing you did, or was it more so, I'm going to go ahead and review my individual role and how I performed?
Well, it depends on what sort of, VOD we were looking at. Like there was times where we would come in early in the morning and we would watch like a game from the LPL or something, and we would just talk about like different rotations or different picks. There was times where we had our individual coach Thomas at the time just go over VODs with us after the game or like in the morning or different things, so it kind of depended, but we did like a solid mix of both.
Yeah, for sure. I like that different mix, because you know, sometimes when you're giving feedback, for example, some people really thrive on being, you know, roasted in front of the team. But as I'm sure you're aware, you know, some people really don't like that. And you know, if you say that someone did something negatively in front of the team, that might have a real big backlash on their own self-efficacy and their own self-mindset. So I think it's important to have different variations when you're giving feedback regarding VODs in a team setting and then also in an individual setting.
I think I don't think I've had coaches that have been so great at it, and I don't think I'm great at it either, because it's such a complex topic. Mm-hmm. But I really do think that as a coach, it is your responsibility to come to understand how your player needs to be coached. You can't just like walk into a team environment and be like, I mean, for lack of a better term, like lay your dick on the table and just be like, this is how it's going to be. Like I'm going to act this way, and that's what it's going to be like. Where I think it's very important for a coach to kind of get to know their players, get to understand how they like to be talked to, how they like to be coached, and these different things. Because at the end of the day, like these are kind of deeper rooted things from my perspective. Yep. So it's a lot easier to adapt to how your players want to be coached rather than try and change them.
Yeah, for sure. I think that brings up a very interesting topic when you look at coaching in esports in comparison to traditional sports, because, you know, traditional sports coaches are really sometimes, you know, in your face, really just ramping yourself up and really bringing so much more energy, I feel like. Whereas if you compare esports coaches, they're a little bit more, okay, so this is what we're going to do. This is how this is going to do. Do you see that difference, or do you kind of see something else?
I think it's kind of hard because I've seen both perspectives where when I was raised playing hockey, all the coaches were like very hard on players when they did badly. And it was kind of like, you were raised in a way where you were taught like this is how coaching works, like versus like I think with League, there could be I've met many pro players who like they didn't grow up playing sports, so they didn't grow up like having these things, so the feedback that they got was like maybe only through school, and oftentimes through school, at least from my perspective here in Canada, like teachers, like they're there to help you, they're very nice, they're very friendly, like the feedback that they give isn't like so harsh or so like aggressive in a way. So I think people kind of come from a lot of different angles, and that's why I think in esports specifically, it's so important for people to try to take the time to understand how someone likes to be coached rather than just trying to brute force their own way.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree. I definitely think that just understanding how your player feels in regards to where they like, you know, different types of feedback, their communication style, what they do even outside of the game, and really just connecting with that player is going to really enrich their experience being coached, I feel.
Yeah. I think one thing that's a huge problem in North America, that I've seen it on teams when I was coaching and I've seen it on teams where I've been playing, where people really try to enforce a certain way of practice or a certain way of doing things onto people rather than kind of letting people be like, I wouldn't say free, but more doing things that they feel make them play better.
Yeah.
I guess an example is there was a team that I was playing on where the perspective of the coaches was like, you need to be playing like all day, every day. Like we should always be triple blocking. Mm-hmm. Like we just shouldn't take days off. Like, look at the LPL players. Like, they play 16 hours a day. Like, that's what you should be doing. Right. These different things where it's like I said before, the way that I've always played best is when I'm taking care of my mental health, I'm taking care of my physical health. And when I sit there and I like slam 6 cups of coffee in a day and play like 16 hours of solo queue and scrims, like, I really like deteriorate as a person and as a player. And it makes me much more of like a bad teammate, a bad person, all of these things. I think like it's very important, at least from my perspective, to give people outlets to do other things in their sport and in their field. Mm. Like I think great examples of this would be like, for example, hockey is one that I can comment on where like the NHL is played however many months a year, and then they have a long off season where they still play some hockey, but like they take this time off and they take this time to go and do these other things so that they feel refreshed. And then they come back and they work hard and they kind of like put their nose to the grindstone. And I think that like the day to day, it's so much different. Like you're not going to see a basketball player that practices basketball 12 hours a day, but when you're playing league, it's so much different because you're inside. You're not like, it's not a physical thing where your body is so drained that you can't do it anymore. I think people kind of forget the fact that like your mind can be drained too. It's just not as easy to recognize.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up because I think it's such a massive one where you compare some other team or some other region is doing X, Y, and Z, and then it's like, okay, we've got to copy that. We've got to do that right here, right now. That's the only way to do it. And I think that mindset is quite poor because it's very individualized how someone plays, how someone scrims, especially time availabilities, in regards to feedback as well, as we talked about. It all comes down to being very individualized. And I think the best example is that is, one of the players I used to coach used to love just taking, you know, maybe 2 or 3 hours a day just to, you know, sit there and just, you know, play casually before he even got into the game. And then, you know, competitively, he would only play for 1 or 2 hours. But because he was able to just sit there and just do his own thing, no one was coaching him. He was just, you know, going through his own methods. He really just felt a lot more connected with the game. And then on the flip end of it, I've seen coaches who have been like, okay, for this next 6 hours of scrims, you have to come this way and I don't want to hear anything else or else, you know, you're not playing, for example. And I feel like it's very tricky to really find a balance in that because it's like, well, you know, that's not what we're used to. And then changing something is not really, you know, what we want to adapt to. So it's a very complex situation, but it's an interesting one for sure.
I think coaches have it hard because it's hard to understand when to put your foot down and when it's acceptable to be like no, you can't do it this way, or no, or like, yeah, it's okay for you to do it this way, and where it's okay to be like a little bit more lenient and where it's not. I like, this is something that I think about a lot and I'm very interested in because I don't have good answers for the questions and I don't have a good way to describe it because I think it's something that is so complex. And I'd like to think that eventually I'd be able to come to some sort of an understanding. But right now, all of the times where I consider like situations that I was in as a player and like how my coach handled it and what he was probably thinking, how I would have handled it, things like this, it's just so complex.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Now, one thing that I want to touch on quickly was this whole idea, and it kind of incorporates the coach as well. So I'm not so sure how it works in league, but is the coach able to talk mid-game? Because I know in Valorant, the coach is only allowed to talk at the end. In Rocket League, I'm allowed to chat with my players throughout. But how does it work in league?
In league, the coaches are allowed to speak during draft, and then that there's a cutoff about, if you're on stage playing, there's a cutoff at 20 seconds where the coaches have to get off the stage.
Really? Wow. Yep. So how do you think it would be different if the coaches could talk the whole game?
It's really hard to say because what a coach brings to a league team, I think, is a lot different than in other sports or even in other games. It's hard to comment on.
Yeah.
Because from what I've seen, most of the time that I've been on teams, the players know more than the coach for the most part.
Yep.
And we as players need like a mediator rather than a teacher. Like almost every time that I've been on a team where I've had a coach who kind of like acts like a know-it-all or thinks that he knows so much about the game and these different things, and then like there's like this like feud between player and coach, and it creates like too many cooks in the kitchen or like too many voices. Where other teams that I've been on where the coach just does a really good job mediating conversation or mediating VOD reviews, like those tend to be more successful. But then also, like, for example, on Immortals, like their head coach, Gil Hoto, Andre, like there's like enigmas in a way, or like special people where when I talk to him, he's very good at convincing you that you're wrong and very good at convincing you that like he knows better than you. So like, I'd be interested to see what it would be like if he was talking during a game. But at the same time, like League is such a hard game to like micromanage from over the top because there's so many small things going on. So I think it would be like too much clutter if there was coaches talking, because there's already five people trying to figure it out.
Yeah, for sure. Would you argue that League's one of the most complex games to actually really master?
I think so, yeah. Because it's a strange thing, because when I think about jungling, like, I think about the game, I try and, like, simplify it as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And while I'm working on specific things that I feel like I need to get better at, I kind of forget that I'm doing a lot of things that I've internalized as, like, good habits.
Yeah.
So it feels like I'm only working on, like, four or five things at once, maybe. But there's so many things that I've... like kind of like packed into my brain as like, I should be doing this, I should be doing that. So I do think it's like very, very complex, but at the same time, like your brain kind of simplifies it down to like one or two things you're working on at a time. But I think that there's just like so much to the game, so much to your decisions, so much to like build paths, different options, different way that you can do things. I think that there's a lot to it.
For sure. 100%. And, I think, you know, say for example, because I mean, there's so many champions to really, I don't even know how many champions there are at the moment. There's probably an extra 20 since I last played, but, there's so many champions. Then you've got items to consider as well. And, you know, it's very much like StarCraft, where it's kind of like, you know, very open-ended, whereas something like CS or Valorant, it's a little bit more linear based, but I guess within that, you still have different rotation stuff you've got to consider as well.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd like go out and say it's the most complex game, but I think that it is pretty complex.
For sure, definitely. Now that I know that the coaches can't, you know, chat in game, that kind of changes my perspective on things, which is really interesting. For sure, I love that. Now, say for example, you're playing a best of three or a best of five, and you're, you know, down to the last game. But you're not really feeling positive about that game. How do you bring about that motivation? Or say, for example, it's a best of seven and, you know, it's 3-1 already and, you know, it's pretty much on match point. Where does that underlying motivation stem from to really say, hey, you know, it's okay, last game, let's just go and give it a roll, or, okay, let's try and switch it up, or, you know, where does that lie?
Well, I haven't played a lot of best of series. I think I've only played a few, and I guess I didn't have a ton of experience with it, so it's hard for me to comment because I don't think that I was ever one to really like bring the team up or make people feel better, but I did have teammates that did it. Mm. And I think a lot of it just comes down to like those people are usually very charismatic people, or they're very good at like understanding their team's emotion and understand like how to make each individual person like feel better. Like some people, like if you give them like a motivational speech or like these different things or like words of affirmation, they might not respond well to it. Or like some people, it's hard because everyone's a little bit different, but usually like the way that I've always felt people do it best is like, kind of like lightening the air, where I've had some teammates that are really funny and they like make a joke or like just do something stupid to make everyone kind of like feel more at ease is the things that I've felt have always helped.
Help you to really just kind of ease the situation, just focus that, you know, this is our last game, or, you know, if it's not our last game, that's all right. But if it is, okay, and kind of accepting that.
Yeah.
For sure. Definitely. I love that. It's kind of like the same situation I go in with my Rocket League guys, that we go into game one like it's game seven, just full send straight into game one and just, you know, give it our all straight up.
Yeah, that's a good way to go about it.
Now, another thing that I want to chat about is obviously lanes are a big one. So do you have much lane experience with the Immortals or previous teams?
Lane experience?
As in LAN, like playing at LAN, like at a tournament.
Oh, at LAN. Well, for the most part, Academy was ran online for the most part that I was there, but there was a split where I think we played 9 out of our 18 games at the studio, and I think I got like a pretty interesting experience there. And I also went to 2 different LANs while I was more in like the amateur scene. Being LAN ETS in Montreal and then a random LAN in Wichita, Kansas.
Cool, awesome. And I guess how was your first experience at LAN, especially playing at LAN? Because obviously I've chatted with a few other pro players and, you know, going to LAN is always that kind of daunting thing, right? You've got so many different things. You're not in your comfort of your own room anymore. You've got the lights, the camera, audiences even. How do you come to fruition with dealing with that and just to kind of block that out?
Well, the first game that I ever played on stage, I ran it down. I absolutely just was playing so bad. And yeah. I felt like very uncomfortable. I don't know how to explain it, but it just felt like I had so much more adrenaline, or like this mm-hmm. like rush of excitement and these different things. And there was so many like lights, and like whenever something would happen, like the floor would like rumble a little bit. And it added a whole new element to it. And I think initially, I don't know what made me feel this way inherently, but I felt like more scared or more timid. And then I think just with experience and over time, I kind of like conquered that in a way. Mm-hmm. And at least from my perspective, I spent a lot of time like playing very scared in my academy matches, and like playing so much worse in game than in my scrims. And then over time, once like you get used to these feelings and get used to this adrenaline, I think that the best players kind of use this to their advantage, and that they play even better on those days.
For sure. Do you think that it's important to kind of accept that, you know, my first land day might be bad and might be okay and might be trash, and that's okay?
I think it is, but it's so much easier said than done. Because if you're going to an esports LAN, it depends on like the volume of it or like how large it is, I guess. But like if you go there and you don't perform, like for example, let's take like a CSGO major or like an FPS major, like people so often, like, because I used to play FPS as well and kind of watch, and people would always talk about how like there's like online players, and then like you would never do this kind of stuff at LAN and all this stuff. And then it's like you show up, and when you play at LAN, if you shit the bed and you don't play very well, like there's going to be so much community backlash. There's going to be so many negative things flying your way. Like it's a lot to take in. Yeah. I think that it is acceptable, and I don't think that there should be so much pressure on the person to perform the first time that they do anything. Like it's a whole new environment. It's so challenging, but I don't really know how a person overcomes that, because there's just like so much being thrown their way. It's like the aspect of like, you want to go there and you want to perform because it's so exciting. Like if you end up performing poorly, like you feel bad about it for yourself, for your teammates, then you're getting all this hate on social media and all this stuff. Like it's very challenging to kind of internalize, is like, this is okay, and it's only going to get better with time. But in reality, that is what's going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I definitely agree. And I think, you know, chatting with some players, I think the infamous thing to do is, you know, when they go to LAN, they play bad. A lot of, you know, other people like to look in and call it the Reddit recap, where they go on Reddit and they just see everyone just trolling on Reddit to see how bad they went. Yeah. You know, I think it's a very interesting field, but I think it's important to really understand that, you know, yes, first game at LAN might be good. It might be, you know, it might be not. And understanding that, that's okay. You know, other people have done it before. I'm not the first one to ever just play at LAN by myself. And I think accepting that is just one of the steps to help you deal with it a little bit faster.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree.
Now, another thing I want to chat about, I guess, was this whole idea of when you got adjusted to the LAN environment, or even, you know, at home, is there a pre-game routine that you like to do? For example, now, like you started to work on a little bit of, you know, your self-skills, is that, you know, characteristic of, I guess, visualization or incorporating other elements into the mix as well?
So I liked to kind of prepare myself mentally and physically through exercise. So one thing that was very interesting, that there was actually someone that I talked to very early on in my time at Immortals, and I want to say he was in kinesiology and working with sports teams, and he talked to me about how like athletes, they train to perform on the days where they have to play in their matches. And for me, when I was like going to exercise or go to the gym, I was always like, you know, like looking up like, oh, like bodybuilding, YouTube, like looking at like, oh, like how do I like get stronger, get bigger, these different things, rather than kind of thinking about it in a way like, how can I use this to emphasize my performance when it comes to my match days? Where I think that was something that really helped me get into the zone, was kind of like eating the same foods on those days, like making sure like what I was eating made me feel good, making sure that my exercise was kind of like almost like a hill up and down in a way, where I would like start off the week like quite slow, and then I would build up to like the day before my match, and then the day of my match, like I would kind of like progressively go down. Like I wouldn't do as much, but I would still like do like a bit of cardio, do a bit of weightlifting, like stretches, stuff like this. And I found that like having that extra energy kind of from like, oh, previously I did so much more, and then today I did just a little bit, I felt like I always had this like extra focus, or this extra little bit of energy to work off of.
Fantastic. I love that. I love the importance of, I guess, addressing exercise, because, you know, obviously it plays such a major role for some, for our performance, you know, not only in traditional sports, but just esports as well. So I love that, because I think there's quite a stigma that exists that, you know, esports players aren't healthy. They aren't exercising. They're not looking at their hydration, nutrition, sleep, stretching. They're not really doing those things. But the reality is that a lot are. So I really agree that it's important, and I love that link between, you know, understanding what you're doing in the gym links towards your performance in game. I like that.
Yeah, I definitely think it was something that it's hard. I always try my best to get my teammates on this like sort of train in a way, but it's always been so challenging because it's not something that's so instant. Yeah. Like if I like go to the gym one day, the next day, like I'm not instantly going to get the benefits of like going to the gym consistently for months on end, like these different things. People want like that, like snap of the finger dopamine or like snap of the finger change. It's like, it's a lifestyle, I think, is what people have to understand. It's something that you like really have to be dedicated to and commit to.
For sure. Definitely. And I think that's the importance of just really addressing that. Like for example, a few of my players I used to coach back in the day, they used to love just, you know, a tournament day. They used to go out and just take like an hour or half an hour walk before the game. And just that little bit of a refresher really got them in the mind, because they could kind of snap back to think that, you know, a week before or 2 weeks earlier when they did that walk, they reflected on their previous match. So being able to go for that walk on that day was really a connection towards, you know, a connection back then. And they were essentially thinking, okay, so that was, I reflected back. That's what I was thinking about. And I can now use that for today's game. And that helped them tremendously.
Yeah, I think something interesting about that is this isn't inherently something that's true, but my the way that at least my brain would always work is I would relate success to things that I did. So let's say like I went into a match and I like popped off, I played super well. Then like I think about like, oh, what did I do during the day that like made me feel good and made me capable of doing these things? And like it could have absolutely no ties into why the game actually went well. Like maybe like the enemy team's running it down or my teammate did something really good, but you create these like kind of, you like form like a string in a way in your brain where it's like, I did this, which made me feel good, so I need to do that again. And that's how my routine came into play, where I felt like because I was doing this routine and because I was doing this thing, then I would always come to the match and I would feel confident because I knew that I had prepared and that I had done what I needed to do before the match to like kind of get in the zone.
For sure. 100%. And I think that kind of makes lands a bit tricky then, because you're not able to do the routine that you're so accustomed to.
Yeah, for sure. It's a whole different ball game playing. Like lands are interesting too, because the ones that I've been at, it's like it runs Friday to Sunday. Sometimes there can be hundreds of teams, like you're playing all day. You don't have time for these different things. It can be kind of tricky.
Yeah. It's hard to find that match, Mitch, for sure. Yeah. For example, a few players that I used to coach, their go-to was just wearing the same t-shirt that they'd like to wear.
Oh, okay.
Everyone has something different. And it's crazy. Like one dude, actually, it was a wallpaper, because he used to have like different wallpapers that rotated in and out. Like every day, his wallpaper changed automatically. And then it so happened that one day he had a wallpaper, and that was like the day he popped off. He's like, okay, that's a wallpaper now. Everyone has something different, which makes it really interesting for sure. I guess before we start to wrap up, you know, you mentioned exercise, which is fantastic, and I love that. Now, I guess another big one, especially, you know, for esports players as well, is this whole idea of sleep. So how do you feel about sleep, and I guess, you know, incorporating it into a routine, you know, in preparation for a big game?
Well, I think for me, I kind of found what feels best. I went through like so many different like health craze phases where it's like, oh, I need to wake up at like 5:30 in the morning and like, or like I need to do these different things. It's just more like what's sustainable for you and what feels good for you. It can be kind of challenging because I felt really great when I was waking up around like 5:30, 6 in the morning, but then that also meant like I was going to sleep around like 9, 10 o'clock. And then I lost out on a lot of like the social aspect of like getting to go with friends or like, because most people, they tend to hang out at night or different things like this. So I think that when it came to sleep, I found like a good median of like the social aspect is really important and the sleep aspect is really important. So it's like, I like getting the same amount of sleep every day, getting in bed at the same time every day, even if I don't like necessarily fall asleep, like my internal clock, like I wake up now at 9 a.m. like most days. Like sometimes my sleep schedule can get a little messed up, but eventually like it'll go back around, and like nine is just like that sweet spot for it's like, I wake up then I sleep 8 hours, or I wake up at nine, I feel good. That's just kind of like, I found that to be the sweet spot for me.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of people have different kind of, different things. And I guess that kind of wraps back to how it's very individualized once again, which I think this is the best part. And I think it's really interesting when you compare, I guess, sleep into a game where it's very individual based. So for example, StarCraft, where you're pretty much a one man army, and they're comparing that towards, you know, League, for example, where you have other people that you need to rely on. And say, for example, one person sleeps really early. So they have scrims in the afternoon, they have a ton of energy. And then someone sleeps until, you know, 11 AM, and then it's like, well, they don't have tons of energy as well. And it's kind of like that mix where someone's really up and then someone's really down in terms of their arousal levels. And I think that's really interesting as well.
Yeah. I think the thing that's like good to kind of like make sure is emphasized on is the fact that like every person's going to be different, and a lot of people, they just want to do what other people do or what works for other people. But if, I mean, I did that as well when I was first starting out. It's like, I just took what habits a good League player had, and I was like, I'm going to do those. And then when it didn't work for me, it's like, oh, well, like, something's wrong with me. Like, why isn't this working for me? But it took a long time for me to realize that you have to invest time, and it can take months depending on like what you want to do, but you have to find out what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And really the only way to do that is like really just put it to the test, give it like a fair chance and stick to it.
For sure. Definitely. 100%. I definitely agree. Another one that I want to quickly touch on was this whole idea of caffeine. So obviously there's a lot of players within the esports industry who, I guess, rely on caffeine as that kind of booster and that kickstarter towards whether it be the start of their day or even the start of their tournament. You know, I've previously gone through with a couple of players implementing a caffeine implementation protocol and kind of linked that with cognitive testing. And, you know, that kind of ended up being at the end, they didn't really like caffeine, and that's fair enough. So I guess what's your, I guess, feeling about caffeine? Do you, you know, you do like it? Do you hate it? I used to hate it, but now I like it. So that's a
it's a complex thing, and it can be kind of dangerous, I feel like.
Yeah.
I'm not the best at maintaining the schedule that I wish that I was really good at maintaining, but I like the idea of cycling caffeine week to week, meaning like you start off the week at like 60 milligrams of caffeine, work your way up to like 140, and then on an off day or a day where like you don't plan on doing anything, like you drop it down to say like 40 milligrams or none or whatever it might be. And that day is going to suck. Like that day, like it's never going to be as fruitful as the other days, but caffeine will give you like higher highs and also lower lows is the way that I look at it. Yep. So I look at it as like a stimulant to help me perform, but also something that like I need to be mindful of, like the fact that like you can become so reliant on it. Like there's been so many times as a pro player where like I was having like two or three energy drinks a day, and then I got into this cycle where it's like, okay, I need to have these because otherwise I'm not going to perform. And I think that it can be like really, really dangerous. So it's something that people have to like really, really take into account.
For sure, definitely. And it kind of makes me feel, you know, not really scared, but just kind of anxious at the fact that there's a lot of players out there who don't have, you know, even just people in Challenger who are ranked and stuff, that who don't have coaches, who don't have teammates, and they're just kind of by themselves. And they might be, you know, drinking, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 energy drinks a day.
Yeah. It's also very bad for you is the rough thing about it. Energy drinks take a big toll on your body.
Yep, for sure. And it's what I've found from, I guess, previous experience, it's very difficult to change someone's mindset towards energy drinks because, I guess, as soon as you change something, it's kind of like, well, I performed super bad, so now I got to go back and actually, you know, drink caffeine again.
Yeah.
And it's about just, you know, addressing that hurdle for sure.
Yeah, it's a challenging thing to understand. I think that there's like, I keep saying it once again, it's like it's so much up to the person. Like, I know some people that perform better without caffeine. I know some people that perform way better with caffeine. It's just, it's so individualized for things like that.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Definitely, man. Now, I guess as we wrap up, what I do at the end of each episode is kind of put you on the spot a little bit, but not too much, but that's all right. Okay. Essentially, you know, we've got a lot of players, pros, coaches, even parents listening in to episodes on MindClickers. And I think, Everyone loves this section at the end where it's kind of like, say, for example, you have, 16, 17 year olds who are thinking about going pro in League of Legends. They're thinking about taking that step from casual to competitive, something you did yourself. What advice would you give them and how would you think about, considering it?
I think it's really important to take a realistic approach towards things.
Yep.
It's something that maybe for the parents hearing it, like people would understand it a little bit better, but mm-hmm. for the kids, I fully understand the mindset because I was that like 16, 17 year old kid that wanted to go pro so badly. And that's like mm-hmm. all that I was focused on. Just like finding balance in life is really just the most important thing at all points in life. It's not going to help you any extra to play those two games of solo queue at night rather than like making sure that you study or exercise or eat well or get better rest or these different things. Like it's a marathon. It's not a sprint is the best way that I can put it. And you really need to make sure that you're taking care of your physical health, taking care of your mental health, while also like putting a priority on practicing and getting better. And if you really think that you can do it and you're really driven, like I think taking a shot at it is good. Just make sure that you're keeping up with your schoolwork and make sure that you're keeping up with your health. That's pretty much all to it.
Fantastic. A perfect summary, really just encapsulating everything. That's to be considerate.
Yeah, I hope so.
Fantastic. I really appreciate that. Potluck. I guess for everyone listening, where can we find you on all your socials?
I think the only social that I really use is Twitter.
Yep.
One sec. I don't even know my ad. I'm horrible.
Oh, hey.
You can find me at lolpotluck on Twitter. That's pretty much the only thing that I use. That links to my Twitch, my other things like that. So you can mm-hmm. find me there.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate you coming on today, man, and really sharing your insight and your story, I guess, towards your initial stages of getting invested into League and then your steps as a pro and your mindset towards all these really key, crucial things that a lot of players, pro players, coaches, everyone goes through every day in regards to League, whether it be dealing with anxiety, brute forcing that positive mindset, and even just thinking about sleep and exercise. So I really appreciate you coming on and sharing all these fantastic insights.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
No worries, man. Take care and enjoy the rest of your day.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye.